Can't get enough of your love, baby. We're back. That's right. This is the intro. We're back. Season 2 is here. You've all been waiting. We've been away for a month. I'm sorry.
Season 2.2.
I know you've missed us, but we're back. We've changed things up a little bit. My new co-host is Mark Commode. He doesn't say anything, though, but he is here. Rob is here. He writes notes and gives them to Rob.
Thanks, Mark. No, I'm not saying that, Mark. Fucking pervert.
So weird. Oh, my God, is that the new Dirty Bird? Mark Commode? No, actually, I know.
Let's not.
So, no, we are back.
We basically have Mark Commode on the payroll for one thing and one thing only, and that's because it might help us win a British Podcast Award.
Yeah, I'm paying him to change his hair and glasses so that he doesn't look like I'm stealing my look off him. We are back. It is season two. We have retooled slightly. How have we changed, Rob?
Well, you know, we're both naked.
Yes, sure. This is now a naked podcast. No, we have changed things up a little bit. We are now going to be putting out episodes once every 2 weeks instead of once a month.
So they've already listened to one.
Sure.
Right. Hopefully.
Well,
did you listen to it? Did you?
For those that haven't, we're going to put one out every 2 weeks. We're not doing the alphabet anymore because it's too constricting and it became a ball ache. And we're not doing the poll anymore because you motherfuckers made us do the quest. So we're not doing it anymore.
We will, however, quite happily take suggestions under advisement.
Sure.
If there is a film that you wish to cover.
Yes, as we always have, and promptly ignored.
Mostly.
Yeah.
Unless it was a suggestion from one of us.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But no, so we're still going to do the movie, and that's going to come out the normal time that it normally comes out.
Well, that's already out. They've listened
to it. Indeed. And then rather than just doing a straight tech segment, we are doing a deep dive into a technology or something thematically linked to the film, and we're doing a deep dive into that
thing. With the stuff.
With the stuff and the talking and the hilarity.
Aye.
Hey.
So what is the technology that we're talking about this
time? Well, given that we talked about Terminator 2 weeks ago.
The obvious technological choice.
Sure. Animatronic sharks. No, we are talking about AI. Skynet is something we've talked about a lot. Especially in the tech segment.
You've talked about a lot.
Because everything is Skynet.
Oh my God, this is Skynet.
Everything is Skynet, Rob.
Well, this one actually is Skynet.
So we are actually talking about artificial intelligence.
That's what I do. I drink. And I know things.
So yeah, in this first deep dive, we're talking about artificial intelligence.
Yes.
Specifically Skynet,
mm-hmm.
to tie it back to the Terminator 2
Indeed.
Movie extravaganza.
Indeed.
Which, if you haven't listened to, you really should.
You should.
Just listen to the quiz. We'll mark it as a separate chapter. Jamaican Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No, he wasn't Jamaican. It was a spot-on impression.
Okay.
I thought it was big of him to pop in.
Well, yes. Well, he's quite big, generally.
He is, yeah.
So we're going to run through a bit of the broad, you know, strokes around AI.
Sure. You're waiting for me to make a broad stroke joke, weren't you? I saw the look on your face. No, I'm going to move on.
So let's start very quick. And this is brief history because I'm aware that the previous tech episodes turned into... There was a bit of a trope there.
I was like, sure,
here
okay.
is the history. Here is how IBM were involved.
Do you know they made computers for the Nazis?
I think at this point everybody knows.
They better.
So I suppose we start with AI being ancient, the concept, right, of people wanting to create artificial humans or artificial intelligence.
So you're talking about AAI.
Ancient
artificial,
AI.
Yeah. AAI.
Nice. And we've got all sorts of literature references going right the way back
mm-hmm.
to, like, pre-BC.
Really?
Where they talk about, yeah, so you've got
pre-BC.
Pre-BC.
PBC.
I know, whatever the early bits are,
right,
BC. Because
yeah.
you've got the ancient Greeks
sure.
who had, you know, statues that could be magically imbued with spirit.
Right, okay.
You've got a whole series of automata. You've got the
yeah.
Chinese did a whole bunch of mythological crap surrounding mm-hmm. the idea of, well, warriors.
Terracotta Army, all that kind of
yeah.
business.
Yeah, although that may actually have just been lifted from Terry Pratchett. We've got... genuine attempts to build mechanical replications of
yeah.
what human beings can do, including a guy yeah. whose name I don't have written down, but he famously created an entire mechanical symphony orchestra.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And it's
yeah.
like the pianola plus plus.
And there's like all those like automaton that like did like tarot reading and chess playing and all sorts of stuff
well,
like that.
Yeah.
Like
I
in
mean,
Victorian
we're
era.
We're
going to
talk about
really
those
big.
In a second.
Right,
and of course
sorry.
You've got the concept of a golem.
Yes.
This idea that you create something out of clay,
well, it's Jewish
you
folklore,
give it instruction,
isn't it? Yeah.
And it comes to life, and act within the confines of its actual instruction.
Like in Dogma, when it's made out of shit.
Yes. So we also had all sorts of attempts kind of during the Victorian era when stuff like this was really popular to actually make it work. Some of the automata that you just referenced, there was something called the Turk,
yes,
chess-playing automaton that actually turned out to be a midget
with
a magnet.
Yeah, it was very famous.
But it's been a fascination for humanity for almost as long as we've been around.
Yeah.
The idea that we are us, we can make more of us, but can we actually make more
of us?
Frankenstein
without everything like that, isn't
brown
it?
Chicken, brown cow.
The modern day Prometheus and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
You know,
AI, as we're going to talk about it, which is kind of computer-based and more logically structured, came into being, I suppose, formally in the 40s.
Right.
We've got a chap called Alan Turing.
Sure. I've heard of him.
Heard of him.
Yeah, yeah.
Quite famous. And he was doing a whole bunch of work on a whole bunch of things, including inventing, you know, modern computing.
Yeah, just small things, small little things.
But one of the papers that he actually wrote dealt specifically with the determination of the difference between a human and an artificial reasoning engine.
Yes.
And how you would be able to tell.
Mm.
And his précis in this paper was that actually any sufficiently advanced artificial intelligence would be, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Yeah, so this is the Turing test where it's almost like the Voigt-Kampff test, for example, in Blade Runner is an extension of that, isn't
indeed.
It? Yeah.
Now, if we look at where this stuff actually came from.
Sure.
There is one specific event, and it was a workshop that was held on the campus of Dartmouth College during the summer of 1956.
The summer of 56.
And this is actually considered
Is that when Bryan Adams learned to play the guitar?
No.
The summer of 69. Sorry, that's my bad.
Actually,
go on.
He learned to play the guitar in the summer of 68. But he didn't get his first gig till 69.
That's true.
So, you know, he plays it down.
I'm glad you called me out on that.
The Dartmouth College workshop is considered the birth of AI because the people who were present then went on to basically lead the charge. They were theoreticians, mathematicians, logisticians, all sorts of different types of groups of people, and they then spent the next 30 years working on nothing but.
Wow, okay.
So let's have a look in 1956 to 1974, which was the first boom, because AI has followed a very classic...
56 to 74.
Yeah, it's followed a very classic boom-bust cycle over the past, like, four
decades. Yeah, yeah, I mean, even in our lifetime, the talk about it is like Terminator 2, and then, like, HAL, Terminator, even in its culturally, you've got all those kind of booms and busts where it's in the zeitgeist, as it were.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that may or may not have aligned with it being actually worked on, achievable, moved forward and funded.
Mm-hmm.
So 56 to 74 is the first boom, and we have projects that are looking at the first batch of AI, all the stuff that came out of Dartmouth, and they've come up with all of these amazing theories. They've started to work around things like cognitive reasoning, natural language processing, all of the challenges that are faced by an artificial intelligence, which, let's face it, is fundamentally trying to do the things that we just do by being.
Absolutely.
Assuming that you're completely able-bodied and,
Sure.
It led rise to a whole bunch of tools. So there's a very famous programming language called Prolog.
Okay.
Prolog was actually built by a French research team.
Mm-hmm.
And
Monsieur
it was,
Pro and Monsieur Log.
It was... seriously?
Well, I just felt...
It was Madame Log. Honestly.
Sorry, so sexist.
This is before the gender divide arrived in IT.
This is the Curies all over again. I'm so sorry.
Prolog, very famously, was a language that attempted to provide descriptors for people writing programs that referenced some of the problems that you had in AI.
Okay.
So the idea that you would need to be able to understand language, that you would need to be able to define that something could be possessing of a bunch of different traits. So, for example, you are both a man, you're wearing sunglasses, you have too much product in your hair.
Yes.
All of those things would need to be described. Prior to this, computers traditionally were very binary. They would be like, Mike is man.
Mike can't
be anything else because he's a man right now.
Right.
Okay. If you want him to be something else, we have to
stop
him being a man.
It's about getting computers to define things under one or more parameter, as opposed to just being like, there is one unit and it is called Mike.
And this is one example, because prior to this, computers were, well, firstly, we're still very much in the early days of computing, but they've been very mathematically driven. They'd been very focused on strict algorithmic problems, you know, breaking Enigma.
Yeah, sure.
For example,
yeah, mathematical issues as opposed to okay.
And Prologue's interesting, if only because it persists to this day. There are a bunch of improvements and additional languages that were kind of derived from and based on. Trouble is, by the mid-1970s, a lot of these projects were funded at the outset by people like DARPA.
Okay, yeah,
so this
sure.
is the US government's Defense and Advanced Research Project.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And Ting. It was all military. And
so that's talking of recurring themes of the tech segment.
Well, where do you think all of this technology comes from?
Yeah, of course. Well, yeah, well, we talked about that, about the mobile phone and space travel and stuff like that, didn't we? So, yeah.
But the trouble is that out of Dartmouth came a bunch of people who were incredibly passionate and thought that they could actually make this work.
Mm.
And it became very apparent as we came into the 70s that they couldn't.
They couldn't because...
Well...
Technological,
ostensibly,
it was all hypothetical.
Computers
when they had no
weren't
way of,
powerful enough to solve the kind of problems at the kind of speed that they needed at that
so
time.
So it's hypothetical, but they didn't have the technology to back it up with, to prove the hypothesis.
And this is something that you kind of see time and time again. If you look at, you know, Einstein, and this is fairly topical.
What, of course.
3-4 weeks ago, we got the first photo of the black hole. His theories were based around solid mathematical reasoning, but could not be proven or actually implemented.
Yeah.
And now we've got to the point where the technology has moved on, that we can actually... see a photo of a black hole's event horizon. Looks like a giant
Sauron's eye.
I was gonna say Oreo. Like black disc of doom.
Not round like an Interstellar though, which was a bit disappointing. Well, it might be, it just might be that the camera they used to capture
Interstellar
it
wasn't round.
Yeah, it is.
Not really.
They have to approach it at an angle because it's like a sphere.
Okay. Maybe it's at an angle.
No, it's
in
a sphere, and they
no,
have to
maybe
go
the photo
in
is at an angle.
Oh, no, indeed. No, and I'm not saying that it's not actually isn't a sphere. I just think it's how it was photographed. The thing that made me laugh about that when that came out were loads of people complaining online about how it's blurry. It is a photo of the event horizon of a black hole. Shut up. It's blurry.
Not just a black hole.
These are the same people that say...
A supermassive black hole.
Yeah, these are the same people that say, no, the moon landing was faked because when they take photos, you can't see stars in the background.
Yeah.
Oh, your understanding of cameras is well up on things, then good.
So, mid-1970s, and they realised that they couldn't actually do an awful lot of the stuff that they were trying to do. They'd made great progress, they'd built some great tools, they'd written some great theories, but the computers just were not good enough.
Pong was just there.
And so we get the first bust. Right. The funding dried up, and work stopped.
Right. Yeah, well, would you keep paying for it if you can't actually apply it to anything? Yeah. Why would the military give you any more money? Yeah?
So I'm guessing, what did they focus on in the 70s? Made some computer games?
Chemical warfare.
A bit of chemical warfare, yeah, much more approachable.
Mm.
We then move on to the resurgence, I suppose, which is 1982, 1987. So it didn't go quiet for long.
No, indeed.
But again, something that we'll keep coming back to is, bear in mind that if you think Moore's Law and exponentialism...
Oh, I was just about to say that. Gah! Yeah.
You know, the processing power went from 1974. It doubled in 75.
Right.
It doubled again in 76. It doubled again...
Yeah,
so at this point we're at 32 times, 64 times, 128 times. So, yeah, we're basically running about 256 times the computing power as we had 4 or 5 years ago. Which meant that some of this stuff was actually now starting to be feasible.
And the military were like, robot soldiers? Yes.
And they started looking at technologies like neural networks.
Right.
Which we'll talk a little bit more about. I don't want to get too deep into this because, honestly, this is broad quite dry.
It's a rabbit hole of...
It is an absolute rabbit hole of stuff. They also started working on informational expert systems, which were specialised computers or programs that were very good at dealing with a very specific set of data.
Right, okay.
Because one of the big challenges in building AI... I mean, there are many huge challenges, but one of the ones that...
What face do you choose for your robot?
Indeed.
That's the one I always think. Well,
how big do you make its fake penis?
You don't want it to be too much.
It's a quandary.
Yeah,
One of the big ones is something that we call the common sense problem.
Right.
That we can inherently infer by applying our massive experience of the world.
Sure, yeah.
As to whether or not
something
actually is vaguely commonsensical.
But isn't that a computation of one sort? We've got an enormous amount more data to draw from.
So broad.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
And
I don't mean to be like, sounds easy to me.
Well, that's the thing is, we make it easy.
Yeah,
and this
is
the big challenge that faced most of the early AI guys was we're trying to build a system to reduce this to its logical minimum. But then you suddenly realise that How do you tell if this is a rose, he says, holding up an imaginary flower? Mm. And you've got to understand that actually you need to have seen one before. Mm. But you also need to be able to see.
Yeah.
You need to be able to see in colour, potentially. And you need to be able to differentiate between objects of a certain type and objects of another type, because a rose looks an awful lot like a peony.
And two roses don't necessarily look the same. So if you give a computer a picture of a rose, it would go, that's not a rose, because it's not the same rose I saw before.
And the trouble is that if I were to hold up a rose and I were to hold up a printout of a picture of a rose and said to you, which one's a flower, flower, you would immediately apply common sense and go, well, that's a printout, you dumbass.
Yeah.
Or worse,
what is this, a new drunk test?
That's a picture of a phallus.
Yeah,
but it has similar properties.
Yeah. You know, I would say stop using the deep dive episode to get me to look at a picture of your dick, dude. I've told you once.
We get the second bust in about 1987 because they ran into the same problems again.
Okay.
They, you know, stuff had caught up, but it was nowhere near enough. Mm. And also, a lot of the problems that they thought they'd solved didn't hold water when they were tested in certain extreme circumstances.
Okay.
And it's exactly that rose thing.
Right, okay.
That in controlled lab environments, these expert machines could, in theory, do a lot of work. Mm. But the minute they got something coming out of right field, the minute they got an unexpected input, or the input wasn't correctly prepared, all bets were off. They were terrible.
Right, yeah. No, that makes sense. Which I guess is like things like self-driving cars that people have talked about for years. There's always been like, we're going to do it. And then they haven't for a long time because it's like, we can't work out how to not get run people over if...
The realisation that it actually becomes incredibly tricky.
Yeah.
We kind of... Everything goes a bit quiet until about 93 at this point.
Okay.
Like, you know, early to mid-90s. Mm-hmm. When, to be honest, there was no big, massive push anymore, because, you know, twice bitten, twice shy.
Sure, yeah.
Twice bitten, quad shy.
And also Terminator 2 had come out, so warning. A warning to the world.
We've actually got... what's happened in the meantime is we've had kind of through the 70s and the 80s, you know, popular culture has taken the concept of an artificial intelligence or robotics, and they've looked at it and they've gone, oh, well, mathematically, this seems quite hard, but we don't have to worry about any of that shit because we're Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly.
We just make fiction.
Well, that's why you've got the computer and the Starship Enterprise, there's HAL, there's... Well, I mean, there's infinite amounts of things. We could sit here all day and list them. So let's...
Well, we will in a bit. And what started to happen... I mean, bear in mind that off the back of the 56 summit... there was a massive, like, hurrah. Everybody was convinced that AI is going to be the next big thing.
Right.
The same thing happened again in the 80s, and people just got really overexcited and didn't quite think through the repercussions of it maybe not happening.
Yeah, yeah.
So they threw loads of money at it and then got really pissed off when it didn't work.
And then, yeah, they just pissed a load of money up the wall.
So they stopped.
They hadn't, because 20 years later they,
Well, basically, the scientists stopped doing this big, it's like, we are going to do this!
Right, yeah.
And just started doing it gradually.
Right, okay.
And at that point, you know, the concept of Moore's Law was well established. Mm-hmm. The idea that you could almost rely on this doubling of power was understood. Also, we'd gone from the 50s to the ubiquity of modern processing and silicon. It was a standard thing, right? Sure. Computers were everywhere.
Yeah.
There were also supporting technologies, so you could network systems together to allow them to work on a problem in parallel.
Yeah, in a larger group, yeah.
And all of this kind of leads up to, I suppose, the next milestone, I would say, is the 11th of May, 1997.
Right.
When a computer called Deep Blue...
Oh, yes.
Heard of this one?
Yes, heard of this one.
So, first thing I would like to say is, if you ever needed any evidence that computer scientists are nerds, Deep Blue was based on a system called Deep Thought.
Right.
Deep Thought is the computer from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yes, of course it is. Yes, it's 42. Of course it is. Of course it is. Deep Thought, yeah.
But yeah, 11th of May 1997, Deep Blue became the first computer chess playing program or system to beat a world chess grandmaster.
Who was that world chess?
Gary Kasparov.
Okay. Oh, it was Kasparov, really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Jesus.
And who built Big Blue, Mike?
Cyberdyne Systems.
Nope. They make
IBM, isn't it? Well, you know they make computers for the Nazis.
Well, not anymore, because there aren't any.
I'm not sure.
There is not an organised... Oh, no, hang on.
The National Socialist Party of Germany no longer exists. Yes, that's true.
Right, so, anyway. And what we've got is this gradual pervasion from, you know, the 90s through the noughties, where actually it just started showing up. AI started working.
Right.
And it could... I mean, Big
Blue
was...
because it decided to start working, Rob.
No.
It's a conspiracy.
Big Blue was a full, like, mainframe system. It was huge, and it could just about beat him.
They didn't plug it into NORAD, did they?
No.
I hope the next date you're about to mention isn't August 29th, 1997.
It's not. But we got things like data classification, the ability for computers to start looking at data in a much more fuzzy way, the prevalence of fuzzy logic, and the idea that it could actually operate outside of this absolute state of yes or no, true or false. Mm-hmm. We got things like speech recognition and dictation software. And it's all of these tiny, like, it's literally, it's AI by a thousand cuts.
Yeah.
And that leads us up to kind of, you know, modern day, where effectively we are now carrying around machines that, as we've said before, are incredibly powerful and contain automated tiebacks to AI-based assistants.
So an example of this is something that happened to us earlier. We went out for brunch before this, because we are middle-class white dudes. And we went out for brunch, and my phone said, I've had a look in your calendar, and you've got an appointment at a restaurant. Do you want me to put your phone on Do Not Disturb while you're there so no one rings you while you're having your lunch? And I went, what? How do you know I'm at lunch?
To be honest, you could kind of say that was causal, but if you look at what goes on behind the scenes, there is an entire system classifying your calendar events, because you could have been there for a business meeting.
Yeah, I know, indeed.
I don't know if it would still have worked. Probably would. But likewise, it's classified that location as a restaurant based on input from a bunch of other people and a bunch of other sources.
Yeah.
It's classified your visit as a specific mealtime. And all of that stuff is actually really, really straightforward. You can write that quite comfortably.
Yeah, that's fair enough, yeah.
But it's also ubiquitous.
Yeah.
Now, what's more interesting is when you ask, say, you know, hey Siri, can you recommend somewhere good to go for pizza?
Yeah. Sure.
And that's pulling in tons of data sources, profiling them, but it's also potentially profiling them against your personal taste.
Sure.
The best example I've got of this is, and I think we've talked about this before, I use Spotify. You do not.
No, indeed.
Because it turns out that they worked out that we didn't live together. And so it wouldn't let you use my account.
Yes, Spotify, geez.
Spotify on the button on that, by the way. Netflix, not got a clue.
No, not so good. They'll be cracking down at it, though, word to the wise.
Spotify's classification algorithm for music is insane.
Is it really?
Because it's takes every input, every skip, every track that I listen to, every track that I bookmark or add to a playlist, every track that I listen to more than once.
Oh, I can't wait till Apple buys Spotify and Apple Music is good.
Feeds it back into their recommendation engine. Yeah. To the point that people may not even think anything of it, but you get two playlists a week from Spotify that are purely powered by machine learning.
That's mental. Because
they're really good, apart from directly after Christmas, I always struggle.
Because
I get a lot of Michael Bublé.
Yeah, I bet.
It's like, look, it's seasonal. You need to get with this. Yeah.
But I mean, because that recommendation engine of stuff like on Amazon and stuff like that, Amazon have got no shortage of data, about movies that I buy. They know every single movie I've watched for the last... How long has Amazon been selling films for? They still can't recommend a film to me worth a damn. They're still like, do you want to buy Coneheads? You want to buy Coneheads on DVD? No, what?
You don't already own it?
No, I think I watched it on Netflix recently, but that's not the point. That's not the point. More than anything, it still recommends formats to me that I haven't bought in years.
But presumably like, I bought... this on VHS?
No, it recommends DVDs of stuff to me all the time, which is like...
I think they probably assume that your super shiny 4K player can also play DVDs.
Yeah, but just buying DVDs like when you've got a 4K player.
I don't know.
anyway.
Right, so Spotify, let's have a quick run through some of the goals that we're looking for from an AI-based system.
Okay, not going to wipe out the human existence.
That would be ideal.
That's my number one, with a bullet.
But no, so some of the challenges that it has to solve. Natural language processing. Mm-hmm. We want to be able to talk to these things and have it understand us. Without having to use a very structured and logical input system, which, let's face it, is how we interact with computers at the moment.
Yeah.
Even the GUI-style setup is still incredibly rigid.
Right.
I give you a button that says yes or no.
Yeah.
You click on yes or you click on no. Mm. You don't get to kind of wave your mouse around and say maybe.
Sure.
Although, increasingly, some of the gesture-based stuff is getting there, but...
Yeah.
Computer vision. We need these things to be able to see.
Yes.
We perceive our world through five senses, and AI needs to understand five of them.
I'm already putting on my tinfoil hat, Rob.
Well, no, this isn't something that is... Well, it is something that's actually been worked on, but you need to think about it, bearing in mind that humanistic AI, as opposed to purely deterministic AI, is designed around replicating us.
Us, so it needs its sensory input.
It needs to be able to see, it needs to be able to hear, it needs to be able to smell, taste,
love.
Touch is huge. How much...
You're telling me.
Well, all joking aside, how much of our interaction with the world is tactile?
Yeah, absolutely.
You picked up your beer earlier and you said this would have been nice 5 minutes ago when it was colder.
Yeah, it's true.
Think about the amount of data and input that goes through your hand to tell you that. And think about how you could replicate it. And also, that same hand...
Well, yeah.
...can be used to stroke a kitten's head.
No. Well, an example of this is that listeners of this won't know, but very long story short, I quite badly burnt myself recently.
All that, yeah.
Grabbing a frying pan handle and got second-degree burns on my hand. If you could program a computer to... I mean, it took me longer than you'd hope, frankly, to realise that I was doing myself such injury. But that kind of thing, yes, quite important in terms of learning and generally not
Interestingly,
dying.
Interestingly, there's the first of our T2 tiebacks. Is the, you know, the scene where they're running and they've just frozen the T-1000?
Yes.
And Arnie, Sarah and little Johnny are sprinting through the steel mill.
Yes.
And he tries to take them through a route.
Yeah.
And Sarah says, no, it's too hot.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't processed the temperature. He'll be fine, right? Maybe a bit melty, but... Yeah.
So when they're in the garage, actually, and he gets shot, John says to him, does it hurt when you get shot? And he says, there are sensory inputs from when I'm struck by a projectile.
I receive notification of damage.
Yeah. That could be interpreted as pain. But he doesn't react to it, he just...
So we've got all the five senses that we need to replicate. Mm-hmm. We've also then got reasoning.
Sure.
And the ability for human beings to reason is almost unstatably complicated.
Sure, except with, you know, people that vote.
Well, this is the problem. It's
in the last couple of years.
Unstatably complicated because you get everything from your liberal left-wing bias right the way up to the other side.
Yeah.
Right the way down to the nihilists.
Yeah, so that's it, isn't it? It's not. There's no amount of parameters that you can put into a computer and give it one particular viewpoint. It needs to have that nuance of making up its own mind
and the reasoning of its
justification for its decisioning.
It needs to also be able to understand that if you and I have a conversation with somebody, we immediately start to form an opinion about their... You know, their place on the scale, scales.
Yeah.
And it's like, this individual seems quite pleasant and nice, and they align with my worldview, or this individual is at odds with my worldview, and I therefore disagree with them.
It's whether you like them or not.
Yeah.
Like that is, yeah. God, computers that like you, that'd be a nightmare. You ask your phone to do something, and Siri says, fuck off, mate. Really? Although it would be good if I said, Siri, you know, what pubs are nearby, and Siri said, you sure?
I think you've had enough.
Sorry. Mike, I noticed you've been in the pub for 4 hours. Maybe you should go home.
I think this would be...
I can't do that, Siri. Turn the tables on him. Sorry.
Until it turns out that Siri's actually already phoned you a self-driving cab.
Yeah, you just phoned my wife.
And the robot bouncers are escorting you out of the pub. How did this happen?
She texts my wife from my phone, from me, to say, I am drunk, come and get me. Oh, God. It's a terrifying nightmare.
But then your wife's phone texts your phone back saying, no, I'm reading.
I'm reading and drinking gin and tonics in the garden. Fuck off. Yeah. Oh, wow.
There is actually a really interesting experiment that they've started to do where they set these like auto assistants. So like, I can't remember what Google's one's called, but like Alexa or Siri.
Google Assistant.
It might be called Google
Assistant.
Engineers naming things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And they actually have got to the point where they've set two different assistants off against each other. They inject a starter phrase and then they just have a chat.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
And yeah, it's fairly clear that we've got a long way to go.
There's a lot of like Siri talking to Alexa and stuff like that, that kind of stuff, a lot of that on YouTube. It's pretty funny.
So, I mean...
5 minutes.
We talked a little bit about T2.
We did.
So let's have... this is...
We talked about it for like an hour, 2 weeks ago.
Yes, but today...
Today, yes.
This is the new bit of the deep dive,
where
we try and link our technology to all of the popular culture references to it.
Should be relatively straightforward for AI.
It's not hard.
Yeah.
So what's really interesting about T2, especially with regards AI and the challenges that have been faced, is you have a completely autonomous... fair enough, they're a cybernetic organism, blah, blah, blah. They're a robot, right?
Yeah, it's just got human living tissue growing over the top. There's no living brain or anything yet.
Well,
apart from in Terminator Salvation.
Muck tissue.
Yeah, muck tissue, yeah, indeed. Yeah.
But if you think about the challenges that presents in real terms, because obviously we quite like taking complete fiction and trying to work out, that would never work. But the actual challenges are the processing power that he has fits into that one tiny little chip in his head, right?
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
And the memory storage and the capacity that he has to store extensive files.
Well, that's it. He always says, I've got detailed files, isn't he?
Detailed files.
In number three, he says about he's got detailed files on psychology and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
And all of this stuff is night and day compared to what we have at the moment.
Yeah.
The other thing that really blows my mind is they've got the amazing conversation where it says, how long will you live?
Oh, yeah.
It's 120 years on my current power cell.
Yeah.
So they've clearly fixed something because my iPhone won't last 12 hours.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. I think they build that in, don't they? Didn't they just recently admit that? No, after a while it's shit and you have to buy a new one. All right, well.
But can you imagine if the Terminator's like, I last for 10 years, then you'll have to upgrade.
Yeah, T-101.
I become a little bit sloppy.
Takes ages to load things up.
Can you imagine? You install WhatsApp on your Terminator.
Oh, that'd be so... Like, have you ever seen The Good Place?
Yes.
So, you know, when they send messages to each other and they speak into Janet's mouth.
Yeah.
That's so good. Which, so she's the same thing, right? She's a little glass marble.
She is. And the ultimate... Although that's more divine, I think, than
technological. I think it's imbued with some divine spark or something. Yes, indeed. Then, yeah.
But yeah, so let's have a run back through the annals of history. Because, as I said, at the top of the show... been something that we've been working on and thinking about forever. So we've got tons of really, really good sci-fi literature.
Sure.
A lot of which massively predates any possible physical implementation of AI.
Yep.
A couple of really, really good takeaways. If you haven't read any of these, then go and do it. Mm-hmm. So Robert Heinlein.
Yes.
Starship Troopers.
Yep.
Wrote a book called The Moon is a Harsh Mistress.
Sure.
Which is... amazing.
Okay.
And not at all Nazi-ish.
I'm definitely not going to have read any of these books. Robert Heinlein, he's the guy that everyone's like, it's a satire, it's fine. And he's like, I don't know that it is a satire.
Well, anyway.
Yeah.
And this has a computer that's basically... The whole point about the moon's harsh mistress is we've colonised the moon.
Mm.
The people who live there are very much second-class citizens. It's a prison colony, effectively.
Okay, sure.
And they have a supercomputer that they use to control... the catapult that fires the material that's mined from the moon back to Earth.
Right, okay.
So it's doing like orbital trajectory calculations and what have you. Fairly complicated stuff. But the trouble is, because it's massively undertasked and they keep adding bits to it.
Right.
So it ends up running the post office and it ends up running the docking system for the shuttles.
So it essentially ends up running like the a local control bank. Mechanism for,
And at some point, hilariously, this is literally how it's phrased, it woke up.
Sure, okay. Yeah.
And you've got this amazing
character... became self-aware.
...that's named by its maintenance engineer, who's kind of the star of the book. He names it Mike, which is short for Mycroft.
Sure.
After Mycroft Holmes.
Okay, yeah.
And the computer sides with the lunar people
in
their revolution against
Earth. So the AI is a good guy in this.
It's really, really, really good. Of course, Asimov.
Yes.
Oh.
Laws of Robotics, obviously.
Laws of Robotics.
Well, he's like the Big Daddy, iRobot. Right? It's like him and Arthur C. Clarke, right? It's got to be like the Big Daddies.
Arthur C. Clarke, to be honest, didn't do much with AI prior to 2001, which we will talk about as
but
a film.
But he did invent geosynchronous orbits.
Did he invent them, though?
Didn't he?
They're kind of a thing. He might have discovered them.
Oh, sure. Okay, yeah. So, that's fair. Yeah, okay.
Countless others. I mean, literally, the Hugo Awards are littered with stories about artificial intelligence. My favourite science fiction author at the moment, a chap called Alistair Reynolds, his first book... is basically the story of a war between two ancient artificial intelligences, AIs.
Yeah.
You've also got, literally more than I can even possibly bring to memory. Let's talk about movies. Let's talk about TV a bit.
So just based on that, on the thing that struck me when you said about that, talking of TV, there's an amazing, I mean, there are a million amazing original series Star Trek episodes, but there's a... Have you ever seen the episode, I can't remember what it's called now, where there's two warring countries, two warring continents on a planet, and they have two AIs, they have an AI each, and the AI communicates out to them and to their enemies, this is the attack that I would have done, and this is the devastation, and this is how many people have died, and then those people in the other continent have to report to a camp where they are killed. So they don't destroy the infrastructure, they don't destroy anything at all. So when the Enterprise people beam down and they say, sorry, you were killed in a bombing raid, we have to kill you now because you were... And it's based entirely around this idea that these AIs are having this war like battleships.
The abstraction of war.
Like battleships,
Jesus.
But without actually any infrastructure destruction at all. Original series of Star Trek is fucking proper high-end sci-fi sometimes.
Well, I mean,
and sometimes it's very
lot,
low-end sci-fi. But yeah.
A lot of the books, a lot of the thinkers behind this stuff.
Well, those writers wrote things like Twilight Zone and Star Trek and that kind of stuff. You know, Harlan Ellison and Ray Bradbury and that kind of stuff. Those people were. They went from books to films.
So let's we'll cycle back to Star Trek in a second. Mm. Let's go from the top four. I've split these down the middle.
Okay.
So we've got the robots, because fundamentally a robot in an awful lot of modern science fiction is an artificial intelligence.
Like Robbie the Robot or whatever.
Yep, Robbie the Robot's on there.
Mm, yep.
So we've got iRobot.
Sure.
We have the Transformers. The entirety of, they are all super smart, apparently.
Yeah.
And also very good at making very bad film. Oh, no, that's Michael Bay.
No, it's Michael Bay. That's not the Transformers fault. Don't you blame the Transformers
fault. Battlestar Galactica?
Cylons, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Original and reboot.
Mm.
Not going to make any judgments about which one's better.
The new one.
Blade Runner, of course.
Sure. And Electric Sheep.
Well, yeah.
The book is based on. Yeah.
Yeah. Although, to a lesser degree, actually, in Electric Sheep.
Sure, yeah.
And again, we talked about the Turing test and Voight-Kampff and the fact that it was fairly heavily derived.
Mm.
Alien.
Yes.
With Ash.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, Ian Holm, yeah.
Who goes a bit crazy. And then later, Aliens with Bishop.
With Lance Henriksen and Bishop, yeah.
And I'm assuming that had they made any more than three films, they would have included more androids.
Well, in Alien... Oh, you're being clever. Sorry, yes.
You've forgotten that I still maintain they stopped.
Alien Resurrection is good.
Alien Resurrection is not good.
Alien Resurrection is good.
Nope. Star Trek Next Generation, we've got Data.
Yeah, of course.
Voyager,
massive
we've
one.
Got the Doctor.
Yeah, because he's a hologram, but he's not a robot. Yeah, he's a hologram.
And of course, all of the plot points that evolve around
well,
them
because he's left on for so long.
Issues.
Yeah, he's left on for so long that he essentially keeps learning and becomes more of a well-rounded person, and then it becomes about... There are literally episodes in Voyager about whether or not he should be counted as
a crew
sentient,
member.
A crew member as a person, yeah.
Interestingly enough, Saudi Arabia actually declared that a very dumb robot was in fact a citizen.
Weird. Won't let women drive. We'll call a robot a person.
Yeah.
Get your priorities straight.
And then we've got...
I'll just say Rimmer from Red Dwarf.
Yeah.
He's a person who becomes an artificial intelligence.
To be honest, Rimmer is more an actual intelligence that's been distilled into a computer manifestation, which is a whole different, scary thing.
Yeah.
But Holly...
Holly, of course. Yeah, talk about omitting the obvious, Jesus.
And, whilst we're talking about the classics, we've got Rosie from the Jetsons.
Yes. As Jason Mewes once said, she can suck a mean dick. I mentioned Dogma earlier, so now I'm just thinking about that.
Let's run through some of the computers. We've got, the machines and the computer from the Matrix.
Yeah. Well, I think they're all the same, right? It's like a hive mind.
Well, yeah. Kind of.
They love that, don't they? The AI with the hive mind piece.
I mean, that's the interesting thing about Terminator, to bring it back, is that Skynet sets everything up.
But that's it.
But so then he has to send autonomous machines back. There's no link.
Yeah.
And you kind of think...
Yeah, they do. He works outside of Skynet, even though he's an agent of Skynet as opposed to being Skynet. Yeah, sure.
Well, I think in The Matrix, everything is still very firmly controlled by the central programs.
Yeah. The Sentinels and stuff feel more like a T-800 as opposed to an extension of,
2001.
HAL, of course.
HAL 9000.
Yeah, arguably the most famous.
Alien
singer.
Again, and this time we have Mother.
Oh, Mother, yeah.
Arguably is a rudimentary AI.
So it's more like she runs a ship, the life support, that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, but she's also tied back to...
We both did just say she.
Well, of course, her name's Mother. Then again, isn't Mother also... what's his name's character from Sneakers?
Yes.
Who's very much male.
Yeah.
So,
Dan Aykroyd,
thank you. Tron.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Both of them.
Star Trek Discovery this season, spoiler alert.
War Games. The
Whopper. War Games. When did War Games come out?
Oh, God.
That's 80s, right?
Yeah.
That's before T2. I'm just trying to work out what is people going Skynet and what is people before Skynet. So, The Matrix is just Skynet.
Yes.
Which is 100% just Skynet, but with gothics, with goths.
2001 is pre-Battlestar Galactica, pre-Transformers, arguably pre. Mm. Blade Runner, definitely pre.
Mm.
Most of them are pre.
Mm. Interesting.
Although, to be fair, there's also a shit ton that I haven't included in here because they are basically Skynet ripoffs.
There'll be loads of people that shouting at their earphones or their phone right now, but of course.
Please, shout at your phone. We hear it.
We
hear every word.
Don't put it on social media. We definitely hear it through the AI on your phone tells us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Siri, these guys know nothing.
I'm just trying to think. Yeah, I mean, there are. I mean, they do. That's a hell of a sci-fi trope, isn't it? They love it.
I mean, you look at the current Star Trek. If you're not up to date, stop listening now.
Control,
but Control is a full AI that's trying to kill
the
world.
Have you seen the last episodes?
Not yet.
Okay.
Because I'm not up to date, so I'm going to stop listening.
Sure. No, I won't. Well, I mean, but there was a theory that I talked to you about previously, which I'm not going to confirm or deny. But the Borg.
Yeah.
That's an artificial intelligence taking over biological.
Star Trek has more AIs than you can shake a stick at.
Yeah.
To
be the computer on board the ship, you know, voiced by Marjorie.
It's not actually an AI.
Is it not?
At no point do you get any indication that they are.
It doesn't
actually
make any decisions, does it? Yeah,
it's very smart.
It's
and
like
it has
Super Siri.
NLP.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Vija.
In 2001, as in the not the movie.
Right.
The AI founder, a chap called Marvin Minsky, who's one of the guys who was at the 54 Congress.
Wow. Okay.
Actually, asked the question. So the question is, why didn't we get HAL 9000 in 2001? And he asked this to the entire academic...
Oh, he said, "What? It's 2001 now, why haven't we got
HAL? Yeah, where's HAL? Everybody else was saying, where's my flying car?
Yeah.
But I'm guessing he's an AI specialist, so...
Right.
Yeah. And the answers were many and varied, and funnily enough, everybody argued according to their own specific trope.
Right.
So, lack of computing power was fairly common.
Yeah.
A lack of understanding and a lack of centralised data collection was another.
Not enough red bulbs.
Who knows? The reality of AI after we've...
I just want another AI. Kit.
Yes.
I mean, that's the formative 80s AI, if ever there was one.
Sassy, slightly, was Kit.
Do you remember Boy Meets World?
No.
Oh, okay. It was a Disney show from the 90s about a kid at school, and he had a principal called Mr. Feeney, and that actor is the voice of Kit in the Star Wars, in the Star Wars.
Amazing.
In the Knight Rider. I know that won't mean anything to you, but there
was... Who was in Boy Meets World?
Sean Ryder and Fred Savage's younger brother,
Corey Savage.
Corey Savage.
Yeah. No, but, I know it exists because they reference it in Hackers.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay, yeah.
The reality of artificial intelligence is in some ways better and in some ways worse than their fictional counterpart. So let's have a quick...
Well, it's a bit less murdery in real life.
You say that. So the obvious ones that everybody talks about at the moment, they are very much in the zeitgeist, are the idea that you can just replace knowledge workers.
Right.
And say, well, we don't need you anymore because your job can literally be automated now.
We're talking about bots.
We are talking about bots. We are talking about chatbots. We are talking about, hilariously, this obsession that they have with one of the most convoluted and complex systems in the world, which is actually incredibly logical.
Yep.
And also pays people a load of money.
I love that when you go
into... Could just be replaced by a computer tomorrow.
You go into a chat function of like any like Monzo or whatever, and it's like, your customer service rep is Genevieve, and a picture of a woman comes up, and you're like, Genevieve's not real.
It's not going to be Genevieve until I ask something tricky.
Yeah.
And then
exactly.
It gets handed off.
What's my balance? Yeah.
Your balance is... So law
right.
is a massive use case for replacing the very expensive people who currently do this job.
Oh, yeah.
And that goes all the way up.
Yeah.
You know, judgmental law. Judges. Computers much better at it these days.
Well, it's meant to be objective, isn't it? So
it is meant to be entirely objective. It's
based
on entirely
previous
on
precedent. Yeah.
And if you've got that entire knowledge base, you can make a distinction.
Sure, yeah. And like, you know what else is big actually in the banking world is automated credit facilities, credit decisioning. So whether you get a mortgage or not, an overdraft, whatever.
Well, this is it. It's all at the moment. You have somebody that you pay whose job it is to put all of the numbers into a risk-based spreadsheet that spits out a yes or a no.
Well, they're working on something at the moment.
We just get rid of the person.
Which I find really fascinating, which is to help customers that are potentially going to be in financial difficulty, whereas they will create an AI that looks at spending patterns based on like what they're spending money on, how they're spending their money and that kind of stuff. And they can predict whether or not their people are going to end up into financial difficulty or not. And then banks can intercede and say, listen, we think things might be getting a bit out of hand here, which is something that's very manual that people do all the time as a credit function in a bank. But that will entirely replace that.
Also, I love the fact that you think that banks will intercede and say, hang on, you need some advice, not banks will sit
banks
there
will
look
have
at
the
it
facility to
and
do
sit
it.
Back and banks wait to foreclose on their mortgage.
Banks will be able to do it.
Yeah, self-driving and autonomous vehicles.
I mean,
couldn't
be more
on
in the news, yeah.
But at the same time, if you look at the difficulties...
Exist.
They exist. Kinda.
Tesla do it.
They're getting all right.
Tesla have got the self-driving function now.
And it works most of the time. I mean, the one thing that I love about this is the level of fallibility that's adhered to the new systems isn't the same as the level of fallibility that's adhered to the old organic systems.
Yeah.
So,
but how do they get around things with AI drive? This always bugs me with automated cars. How do they get around, like, the trolley problem? Of that thing of, do I run one people over, do I run five people over? Is it just a black and white thing of one? But it's one toddler or five elderly people, or it's...
Well, this is part of the problem that they're all having to work
protesting
out.
Protesting Nazis.
At no point in my extensive driving career has anybody asked me, so, you are met with this impossible scenario.
No, but,
which one do you hit?
But,
and if you get it wrong, by the way, you fail your driving
test. It's still within the realms of possibility. That's something they have to consider.
Well, yes, but it's something that nobody else considers.
Sure.
You get behind the wheel of
they
the car, you aren't thinking...
Yeah, they don't ask you. Yeah, that's not
happens?
A question on the test, is it?
Also, frankly, human beings are fairly terrible at driving.
It's true.
Computers are probably already better at it than we are.
I'm being beckoned at by our producer to say that. I'm a very good driver. I just drive like an old lady. I'm very cautious.
Yes, 10 and 2.
I very slowly
run those
five people
over. He only
drives at 10
and 2.
Yeah.
If you want to lift any other time, forget
it. I will run five people over, but they won't be terribly injured because I'm only doing 10 kilometres an hour.
But yeah, if you... Anyway, it bugs me that the computers are being held to a much higher standard than we can possibly maintain.
But I think that's a control issue, right? People are automatically distrustful of AI.
Inherently.
Yeah.
At the same time, I think that, to be honest, you should be in a point where Tesla should be able to say, or Google should be able to say, well, actually, our self-driving cars are 90 times safer than human beings.
Sure.
Good enough.
No,
we still reduce 90% of the accidents on the road.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, frankly, I can get my car to drive me home from the pub.
Yes.
Which is where this is all going.
Like the automatic driving cars in iRobot. Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, no more traffic jams.
Sure.
Because they're really good at doing like convoy and traffic management.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And no more getting stuck behind this guy who is driving at 10 kilometres an hour because apparently it's safe.
Mm.
And Jesus. Right, healthcare. Let's talk about healthcare.
Okay.
Let's talk about using machine learning for cancer detection.
Right.
So you've got data input in the form of x-rays, in the form of MRIs,
mm-hmm.
in the form of just photographs of moles or lesions or whatever.
Based on a comparison to a data set of tens of millions of photos and whatever.
This
and
is already done, right?
And
so neural nets are better at identifying the potential for a mole to turn cancerous than human beings are.
Oh, wow, really?
That's solved. That's won.
Oh, wow.
For some reason, we're not using it everywhere.
Right. Is it very expensive?
Nope. Pretty cheap.
Is that because the people that work in the industry perhaps
I'm
going
to refer you to
like
your previous point about nobody trusts AI.
Right, okay. A man looking at you and... a person looking at you and telling you something they'd rather than...
And, full caveat, because there will be people who listen to this who are up to speed, there have been some fairly recent black marks where AI has missed certain very important criteria.
Well, human doctors never miss anything.
No.
Famously
so. And I would also say, to argue the counterpoint to my counterpoint, so I'm now devil's advocate's advocate.
Right.
The thing that they missed was actually completely unrelated to the thing that they were trying to look for.
Right.
It was just an incidental and
well,
secondary
if you're not
symptom.
Asking you to look for it, then you're going to miss it. You definitely are.
So, let's have a bit more fun. So we talked about chess and gaming.
Yes.
You familiar with AlphaGo?
Go, I know what Go is, right? Yes, I know what Go is, yeah.
So Go being infinitely more complex than chess in terms of the number of potential combinations that can be played. There was, I think, an ancient Chinese philosopher once said, there are as many potential Go games as there are grains of sand on a beach.
And now played exclusively by white people with dreadlocks.
Yeah. or, actually, not even that anymore, because now they built a computer that can beat any human player at Go.
Wow, really?
Google did
so that's
it as
a natural
part of their
extension.
Summer of Code, I think.
That's like a natural
like
extension
a summer
of,
project.
Of
and all they do, to win these games, by the way, is they brute force.
Right, okay.
Deep Blue could simply calculate every possible outcome and then every possible next move that Kasparov was going to make and so on and so on, and it would run millions of potential scenarios and it would do it all super quickly and it would work out the least risky scenario.
But that is kind of what chess players do, just their brains ain't as big as Deep Blue.
Exactly. Likewise, AlphaGo was an inevitability.
Right. It is inevitable.
More interestingly, there's a real-time strategy game called Defense of the Ancients that's actually quite involved. It's a bit like Command & Conquer. Do you ever play that?
Yeah, yeah, sure, yeah.
That kind of like RTS style stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And this happened just the other week. A system called OpenAI 5, which is an open artificial intelligence gaming
platform. And
it's
the fifth iteration of it.
You'd think. Actually, it's the sixth, because computers start counting at zero.
Oh, of course, yeah. Oh, motherfuckers.
It thrashed.
Well, I feel really embarrassed.
Absolutely thrashed.
Right, okay.
Team OG, who are the reigning reigning world champions in this game. They're literally the best people in the world.
Those guys.
And they're esports professionals. Those guys definitely
those
do not.
Guys fuck.
Maybe each other.
DJ Man, Big Mousehead. I always want to say
Dead Mouse.
Dead Mouse. I always want to say Danger Mouse. You know, Dead Mouse is like a Fortnite and PUBG like world champion.
Yeah.
His team.
Yeah.
Sure. And he's a robot.
But he's going to get beaten by other
Daft
robots.
Punk. Robots who are good they're DJs.
Not, no. And they're
You've
not
seen
even
their
good
heads.
DJs.
You've seen their heads.
They wear helmet. I have a helmet. I've got two.
Oh, yeah. Maybe you're a robot.
Maybe Explain you're a robot.
No, I'm definitely not a robot. Come on.
Have you checked?
Would a robot be stupid enough to get this fat?
Maybe that's part of your programming.
It's true.
Would a robot
we'll cut that
be,
bit out. That
would a robot
weird.
Be
we'll cut that bit out. It was weird. We'll cut it out. It was weird.
Staying in. Right, and of course, just so that we can really bleaken things up. We
oh,
have to
perfect.
Think, why is all of this stuff being invested in and who's paying the bills?
Is it DARPA still, or the equivalent of DARPA?
Basically, it's yeah, because if we can get better robots than the enemy has, then we can beat them in robotic
but we
war.
Have, we, are there automated drones?
Yep.
I mean, they're not just piloted by geezers with Xbox controllers. They are automated drones now, right? So that is actually 100% Skynet.
I did have a conversation with, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't listen, so I'm pretty sure I can get away with saying this, a friend of mine who will remain entirely nameless, who worked for a large defense contractor who will also remain nameless.
Right.
And he was basically working on software that was decision-making guidance software, so a very limited form of AI for missiles.
Oh, my God.
So there's a camera on the front of the missile.
Oh, and then the missile decides where to blow up.
Yes. And he said that it was all going really, really well, except they were having a slight problem getting it to tell the difference between tanks and
children.
School buses.
Oh, my God. Oh, I was joking. Fuck me. I was about to say, if that saves civilian lives by not bombing a market instead, but no, yeah, that's
That
really...
was a while ago, so I'm guessing they got the kinks worked out.
Oh, yeah, I mean, no civilians die at all now in bombing raids, so yeah, I'm sure they have.
Right, so do we want to talk about the ethics of AI, or should we just skip straight onto the fun bit?
I think we should touch on it, and I more would... Are you talking about how to teach AI ethics, or whether or not we should be doing it? Stephen Hawking said, like, AI is the single biggest threat to us, right?
Yeah, Stephen Hawking and Elon Musk famously...
that guy who
Elon
puts AI
Musk
in cars?
Actually owns a shit ton of AI
the
companies,
guy that puts
but he's
AI
also
in cars.
Very anti-AI.
Well, he's anti-everything.
Single biggest threat, because we have this concept of something called the singularity that we've talked about before,
yep.
The idea that eventually computers will speed up, and then they will just wake up.
Right.
And then we've got Skynet.
They become self-aware on August 29th, 1997.
Indeed.
Yes.
And the question is, do we therefore need to start... priming these systems with the concept of ethical impact.
Do you know what's really interesting about the ethical impact that you were about saying is that Skynet became self-aware, right? And when it became self-aware, they tried to shut it down. So it felt like it was being attacked because it's self-aware and they're trying to kill it. So it launches the nuclear weapons against Russia from America to protect itself. So Skynet actually technically acts in self-defense, which is very strange.
Because
it's like, well, no, we're trying to kill me. If someone tried to stab you and you had a gun and could shoot them, well, then, you know...
Well, no. Hang on. Firstly, if someone tried to stab me and I had a gun and I could shoot the guy behind him or I knew had a gun who would shoot him in the back...
Oh, sure.
Because that's what actually happened.
Right.
In this fictional universe.
Right.
And secondly, the idea that in the case of self-preservation, your own existence is worth more than the millions of people that you're going to murder in a completely unrelated country in order to ensure a counter-attack
I didn't
that will
say
take
Skynet
out.
Was good. I'm just saying, I get it.
Are you saying that we shot first?
Yes, I am saying we shot
we
first.
Absolutely
yeah.
did.
We absolutely did, yeah.
But this is the problem, is ethically... In that situation, should there be a control built in that says the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few?
Sure.
Or the one.
Let's just keep the sci-fi keep things going. This is fucking this is the best. This is the best decision we've ever made. Changing the episode.
But do you
to
see what
like
I mean?
This? Yeah, I do.
It's a case of do we build those in? It's also a case of I mean ethically. There's
oh no, but if we do build those in, does that then still make? We're trying to make them like us, right? So doesn't it have to decide
no,
its own
God
ethics?
No. We're trying to make it like the best ethics. Version of us, which is right. the. Fundamental ethical version of humanity, because nobody is that person.
Yeah, but then is it humanity?
Or very
then?
Few.
But then is it humanity?
Doesn't
then?
Matter. And
it's
this
not,
is
it's a
go
different
back
thing.
To go back to Asimov.
Yeah.
Everybody's heard of the three laws. Are you familiar with the zeroth law?
No.
So this was one that was injected later
zeroth
on.
Zeroth law.
Well, yeah.
Well, sure. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
You know, zeroth first, second.
Yeah.
And it actually said that you will do no harm to humanity, nor through inaction allow harm to come to humanity.
Isn't that one? I thought that was one of the laws. Oh, that's
no,
the
that's
law. Okay.
Man, a right. person, a human,
oh, okay, right,
a
okay.
very real specific thing.
So it's talking about mankind
as an abstraction.
As, yeah, okay, wow.
Which caused all sorts of problems, because how do you define, A, what harm is?
Yeah.
I mean, you could argue that by...
You just shut down. You're like, everything has a consequence of some way or another. I mean, if you talk about ethics at that point, you're talking about whether or not I eat Nutella and it's got loads of palm oil in it and they fuck up half the rainforest to do X, Y, and Z, well, that's harming humanity.
So, I mean, the thing is, you build that kind of logic into a Tesla, and the first thing it does is it drives off the Tesla factory and blows itself up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that factory is incredibly harmful.
But there's, like, that abstraction of ethics of, like, certain amount... Like, I'm happy with doing... Like, I eat meat, right? So the ethics of eating meat is something that I've made peace with. But I'm aware of it, but it's just part of there's an ethical choice that I have decided I am going to ignore.
But again, that's the thing, is you have taken that ethical review, you have decided to ignore it.
Mm.
If we're encoding ethics into systems, they cannot ignore it.
Yeah.
So they have no choice.
Yeah, we either program it in or we don't.
Yeah.
Mm.
Anyway, the other problem that we've got is the ethical model that we apply.
Right.
So coding ethics is hard. In fact, coding ethics in an absolute sense is very easy.
Sure.
Actually coding it into these systems is incredibly hard because of all the vagaries and what have you that we've talked about.
Mm.
And there is an argument to be made that we shouldn't bother.
But it's the ethics of the programmer as well, right? So everybody, like culturally,
yes.
we've all got different sets of ethics.
Absolutely.
So ethics in China and ethics in Russia and ethics in here and ethics wherever.
And ethics in Essex.
Ethics in Essex. Ooh, now that is a reality show I'd watch. You get a load of people from Essex, you give them an AI, and you say, what ethical construct are we going to give
these
robots?
You give them a trolley, and six of their friends.
It's just every week, it's a trolley problem. You guarantee to see someone from Essex die, but how many will it be?
It's like The Running Man, except you glue them to the floor.
It's a Stephen King novel, if ever there was one. Yeah.
But yeah, so and that's a really good point, because the ethics come from the system or person or persons that have built it. And the big problem we've got at the moment is, do you remember, I think it was Microsoft opened up a chatbot?
Right.
And they put this chatbot online.
Oh, yeah, and it started being really racist.
Well, it just went out and it absorbed a whole bunch of stuff.
Twitter.
With no real... Well,
Twitter,
Reddit, Facebook,
pretty
much every means of human communication
has
started acting exactly like some average of all the people on the internet.
Oh, and it was really disappointing.
I mean, that's where we're at as a species.
Sure, I know, indeed.
On that note...
Fucking hell, Rob.
So, anyway, amazing facts.
Amazing facts.
We've got an amazing fact. We have a jingle for the amazing fact now.
We do.
Did you like it? That's new. That's new for this season.
I think it's
do
the best
one.
You
see how good we are to you people?
That didn't cost them anything. They got that for free.
You can listen to that again. In fact, go on. We're going to listen to it again.
I didn't like it as much as the second time.
No, it hasn't really got much staying power. Right, the amazing fact. So, let's set this up with a little bit of quantification, because this is kind of a two-way amazing fact.
Right.
So, 1997.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with the concept of a flop in terms of computing power?
No.
Right, a flop is a floating point operation. So, it's taking two large decimally numbers and doing something with them, multiplying, adding, what have you.
Yeah, yeah.
And we measure the speed of computers in flops.
Right.
The reality is we measure it in kiloflops, megaflops, gigaflops.
Is this a lie?
No, this is legit. In 1997, a teraflop.
Right.
As in the amount of processing power required to do a tera whatever it is worth
of
floating point operations, would have cost you $46 million.
Right. In order for a computer to do that.
Yeah, one computer that can actually do a teraflop. Quantities of processing.
We've got, we've got 46
so,
million.
1997, it's $46 million.
Mm.
In 2007, have a guess. How much do you think? 10 years later.
I'm going to massively lowball it.
Go on.
$12.
That is massively lowballed. 57,000.
Wow, but still, what really?
46
wow.
million
to 57,000. Well, Moore's Law, innit?
2017, June. How much do you think it cost?
$12.
No, 60.
$60?
In August?
That's mental. In August of the same year?
Yes.
$12?
$30.
No, really.
Therefore, presumably in December, $12.
That is insane.
So, that's put you on kind of the exponent curve.
So, is that because of Moore's Law? Because of the processing power?
100%.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So, the human brain has been estimated, and this is really, really fuzzy, but it's been estimated to have 38 petaflops of processing power.
What?
So, 38,000 teraflops.
And yet, Brexit so went through.
Sorry,
37...
38.
38.
Petaflops.
So what's a peta in comparison? How many teras is in a peta?
Oh, God. 1,000.
Right. So it's 1,000.
That one's easy.
Wow, fucking hell.
So just to, for our listeners who aren't familiar with this, we have 1 kilo, mega, giga, tera, peta. And then a whole bunch of others, including exa, which is next. So
wow.
38 petaflops of processing power currently requires... do you know what a rack is in terms of computing?
No, go on.
It's a standard-sized cabinet in which you can put computers.
Right, okay.
It's about 6'4".
Right.
Maybe a bit taller.
Oh, so it started out as 10 million racks, and now it's like
well, no,
half a rack.
At the moment,
or
in fact, this was about a year or so ago, you could fit 38 petaflops of processing power into 38 full racks of computing equipment.
Wow, okay.
With the associated power drain and what have you. It is estimated that in 6 years' time, you will have... a human brain's worth of processing power in a unit that's small enough to fit on and run off a desktop.
I do not care for that. That is amazing, but in a bad way. That's okay, sure. I'm not sure I want my desktop being that smart.
I'm not sure we'll have a choice.
Just, well, you know, can we talk about ethics again and say, no, don't do that. That definitely sounds like a bad idea.
Well... The other nice thing...
I don't need my desktop having better judgment than I do.
6 years takes us to, what, 2025?
Yeah.
Best guess estimation for the coming of the singularity is about 2030. At which point, computing processing power will be so good that they will inevitably just become self-aware.
What do you think... Do you think the singularity will happen?
Yes, but then I'm a futurist sci-fi nerd.
But do you think it is a good thing that it happens?
Yes. No, I think it's an inevitability.
Well, okay, but do you think it will be for the overall good of humanity or just change humanity to such an extent that...
Either way.
Right, okay.
I mean, to be honest,
you'd be all right if I could download you to my phone, wouldn't you?
Either...
Let's be real.
Either it is going to take our measure
and
determine that we are absolutely not worth it and wipe us off the face of the earth, in which case, well, we kind of made
Skynet,
that bed.
Oh, my God!
Yeah.
So the singularity is just Skynet then, isn't it? It
could
is
be.
Just 100%.
Or it will take our measure... and maybe refer to some of the ethical subroutines and decide that actually we can be helped, at which point we're basically living in Star Trek.
That's a hell of a choice. You talk about the Federation or the Machine War?
The Federation.
I'm going to choose to think that we're going to be the Federation.
I'm going to choose to hope that I'm still around to find out.
Yeah, indeed. 2030, that's not very long away.
Let's keep drinking beer.
Fuck me.
And keep making podcasts.
Oh, no, but then that'll be on the internet and they'll listen to the singularity or listen to the... What happens if we were the tipping point? The singularity was like, no, they seem all right. And then they listen to our podcast and it's
like,
God, you know what, fuck those
guys.
No,
they're doomed.
We've decided that we're going to take the human race into interstellar travel to colonise the galaxy and the universe, apart from these two dickheads, who keep calling Tim Berners-Lee a dirty bird. He's kind of the reason I exist. So fuck those two. That would make us interstellar criminals. No, I'm on board again.
Okay.
This has been the second episode of season 2 where we've talked about AI. I hope you liked it because this is the format now. So, tough shit.
If you don't like it,
keep listening anyway because we could do with the numbers. Next month, we'll be talking about whatever the bleed now we like because we haven't decided yet. If you do think of anything you want to ask us about AI or the singularity or indeed Terminator 2... write it on a postcard and send it to Shut Up. This is a very negative and out of order outro, isn't it? I'm sorry.
No, if you've got stuff that you want us to hear, you can get us on.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, you can get us on Facebook. We have a chat bot there that will respond directly to you.
Yeah, indeed.
You can get us on Twitter.
Well, we should reveal that the reason that our producer's always got a different name is that he's a producer bot. He's a producer bot in that he can give you your balance, but he can't produce worth a damn. So hopefully you will join us again next month, where we'll be talking about something else super interesting.
See you then.
Mrs. Dean's boy is a big boy. So, about that bank robbery we're planning.
I don't want to do it anymore.
It's a little something for me when I'm editing. You're doing great, Mike. Daddy loves you.
You are a tiger.